Welcome to the Culture and Sports Podcast, where we have discussions about how leadership and organizational culture impact organizational success, team and athlete performance, and the short and long-term mental, physical, and emotional health of athletes.
The Culture and Sports Podcast is brought to you by Culture and Sports.
Culture and Sports helps sports organizations, teams, coaches, support and front office staff, and athletes understand the importance of leadership and organizational culture and its direct impact on success. I'm Jeremy Piasecki, the Executive Director of Culture and Sports.
And I'm Sydney Moore, a former Division I volleyball player and CEO of Thrive Insights, a sports consulting firm. Please join us for Season 6 of the Culture and Sports Podcast.
Welcome back to the Culture and Sports Podcast. Today, we're going to have a very special conversation as Sydney has started playing professional volleyball in Bundesliga in Germany. How are you doing today in Germany, Sydney?
I'm doing well. It's 6 for me. I think it's like 8 or 9 a.m. for you.
Yeah, it's still pretty early, yeah.
Feeling good. Feeling really good.
Yeah. So last time, or the last few episodes, we've hinted that you're going to go play professional volleyball, but now that you're there, can you explain a little bit more about just your experience finding an agent, you know, your agent finding a organization that fit you, and a little more about that process, and then we'll transition into you actually arriving at your team.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I signed with my agent a couple months after my last game as a Division I athlete at Syracuse. So I think our season ended in like last weekend of November, so basically December, and I signed maybe in February or March. And then from there, and I signed with an agent that was specifically that focused in European volleyball, because that was kind of where I thought I would want to travel and where I'd want to go live, and also just had a lot of people who had had that kind of experience before, and so I thought that would be a good first place to go play. Worked with him and also just people that I knew in the volleyball world to find my spot here in Grimma, Germany. And honestly, from, you know, that moment on, just like spent time talking with the team, trying to figure out a contract, and then once I signed, it was really all about preparing. And I know we're going to get into it, but I think a huge thing is that throughout this process, I never knew for sure if I would have a team. I wouldn't say that I necessarily had like the easiest process. It wasn't until like mid-June that I actually was able to sign a contract. But throughout the whole process in the last couple of years, I've been training and acting like I was going to go pro.
So obviously making it on a team, on a professional contract, was important to you. But obviously there were some other things that were important to you as well. I'm sure feeling valued or just being a good fit, not only for you, but the team, feeling that you would be a good fit for the role they needed you as well. Can you talk a little bit about more about the things you were specifically looking for in your team search?
Yeah, so I think the first thing was just finding a team that needed my position, so a team that needed a middle, and also just paying attention to what the depth is like on that team. So, like, do you guys have three middles? Do you only have two middles? Do you really, really need one because one is leaving and you only have one on the roster right now? And also just understanding, like, how they see my skills and how they would want that. In the beginning of the process, pretty earlier on, there were some teams in like the top leagues of also top countries that were somewhat interested. But as I continued to talk with them or just do more research, I realized like, hey, like while I might eventually be able to come here, or maybe I can do a few test practices, maybe eventually get on the team, I needed to also make sure that this would be somewhere that would be stable. Playing in Europe is a little bit different than playing on like a college team in the US, where it's like, you're on the team the whole year, regardless, even if you don't play, kind of thing. You can get traded, you can get cut, you can be sent home, and also, like, you could just not get the opportunity to get another contract because people didn't see you play or because your team didn't have a good opinion of you. So that was a huge thing, was just making sure that my position was wanted and that the skill level that I was at was something that they understood and that they were good with and fit the league.
So one of the things you brought up once or twice before in a prior episode was the length of the contract that you wanted to sign. Yeah. You know, everyone would be like, oh, sign me on a huge contract for a long period of time. What were your thoughts on contract lengths in general?
I think in general, it's always better, I think, honestly, on both sides to sign a shorter contract at this point, especially when you haven't been able to see anything in person. And also, when, like, for me, it's like I do as much research as I can. I had lots of conversations, but at the end, you're always kind of going in blind. It's not like when I was at Cornell and I was like, oh, I want to go to Syracuse, and I've played against the coaches and I've seen the campus and all of that. Like, I was very much flying blind. So actually, both with my agent and with the team, I wanted to sign 1 year or less contracts. Obviously, with the team, I wanted to sign a contract for the season. But with my agent, I was actually originally like, let's do 3 months or six months so that I can see how it goes. If we vibe well, if you're able to find me good placements. And so that really early on, if it's not working out, that I could pivot and just put myself in the best position to get what I wanted.
Now, why... So you've already explained why this specific case you wanted to have a shorter contract, but can you explain why it's beneficial for both groups for it to be a shorter contract at the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, I think for an agent perspective, like, it can be great to have a longer contract if it's like a player that's really well known or really well established and already has a lot of people kind of chasing after them and you just have to like get the contract done. But I also think, you know, for some agents, like, it can be good to have a shorter contract too, because players can also be picky, right? Like, there were some countries or some leagues and different things that I did not want to go into just because of hearing about experiences of other people or just my own personal, like, hey, where do I want to go live? And so I'd like to think that I was a good athlete and, you know, not too difficult to deal with, but it could be a situation where you have an athlete that is difficult or, you know, you're not really vibing and now you're kind of stuck with them for a year and then it seems like you weren't able to get them placed when maybe there were other things going on.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. In your contract negotiations, obviously you discussed length of contract, pay. Going back to your old college days, which weren't that old, they were just this past year, but where does control of your own name, image, and likeness come in?
You know, that's such a good question. It's something I actually asked when I met with the coaches and the manager for the first time. I asked if they have any sponsors that are specific to the girls or if any of the athletes on the team work with sponsors directly. And at the current point, they don't, which I thought was, like, was really interesting, and maybe that'll change. We'll see. I don't know. But at the current moment, I'm really just responsible for wearing the jersey. And I'd say wearing the jersey is, like, my main way of representing the sponsors or having kind of, like, an NIL or brand deal specific to that team. But I also really liked that the team knows that I have a podcast and that I make content and different things. And there's other girls on the team that are interested in that as well. And so far they've been really supportive. So, if anything, I think that going and playing in Germany kind of makes my personal brand and my podcast a little bit more interesting. I'm actually now, you know, it expands it. Like, now I'm seeing the locations of people who follow me and stuff expanding beyond just, you know, the U.S. But I've also been working on a new series for my podcast, kind of a vlog commentary about my life, where every couple of weeks I'll go on and tell you guys about what's been happening, my struggles, all of that, along with, you know, some cool videos and photos from my experience.
So you bring up struggles. I mean, shouldn't everything be great? You know, you fly out to Germany, you're playing on a professional team now. Life should be great, right? I mean, yeah. What are some of the struggles that you might be encountering while you're there?
I think the first one is just, I think some things are a struggle, like some things like learning a new language. That's a struggle that's difficult to do. Missing your family, getting used to the time difference. And everything else, I really just try to say it as different, and that helps me with my own brain, like, having a positive mindset. Just things are different. So, like, and for me, that is a little bit of a struggle because I like to be very independent. I'm used to being a leader on my team over the last couple of years. I'm used to being very vocal and communicative, and now I have to pivot. I have to ask for help a lot. I make mistakes a lot and try to help, and sometimes things aren't done the right way. So, like, just giving some examples, like, the way that they set up the net here in Germany is a slightly different part than what we do in the U.S. So I think I'm doing something and I'm actually messing it up. Someone has to politely correct me, or the recycling in my apartment. My roommate's like, hey, that doesn't go in there. Now we have to, like, reorganize everything. Just things like that, where sometimes you might consider, if you're not being kind to yourself or to others, you might call it, like, stupidity or something, but just recognizing that it's different and getting used to those changes. Those are some of the struggles. And then from a volleyball perspective, again, I spent a lot of time talking to the coaches and just trying to understand how they run volleyball here and what the coach's philosophy is. So it's actually very similar to the philosophies that I had at other clubs or other teams. See, I'm already saying clubs, my teams in the U.S., but that can also be a difference, like who's responsible for what types of balls and things like that.
Exactly. Now, do you think that some of your struggles are just about change in general, or do you think it's because you moved, so many, miles away or, a continent away? Do you think it's more about that or about the change itself?
I think it's about the change itself. I mean, maybe those are kind of like the same thing, right? Like, moving thousands of miles away is a change. But I do think it's the change itself, because I'll even say, like, I remember the first week or 2 weeks that I was at Syracuse, I was calling my parents, like, I don't know where anything is. I keep getting lost. This sucks. La la la. And it gets better, right? And that's, that was only 45 minutes up the road from where I had been for years. So I think a lot of it is just a change, new people. And I just would say the language is, like, the biggest thing for me that is different. I'm the only non-German person on my team. And so I'm the only person who doesn't speak German. So we typically speak German in practice. And then my coach or some teammates will translate for me as needed. But it's still definitely, like, a barrier.
Now, do you feel, because it's a team speaking a different language, do you feel ever left out, or do you feel that they've been very accommodating to you and trying to bring you into the team as an equal member?
I think they've definitely been extremely accommodating. I mean, I think about it my way too, right? Like, everyone around you speaks the same language. We've all been speaking the same language forever, and we have all of our jokes and stuff in that language. Like, you're always going to do your best to accommodate and bring that other person in. But at the same time, like, when you're talking one-on-one, like, you're going to speak in your most comfortable language with that person, right? So I think for me, what's actually been really interesting is just, like, it seems so crazy, but, like, minding my business. It's, like, funny, but it's, like, serious. Like, if people are talking in the locker room, like, I'm just such a social person and always want to, like, share and add all this extra information and different things. That's, like, allowing them to have, like, obviously, like, I have to allow them to have that conversation. Like, I don't know what they're saying necessarily, but just recognizing, like, how, I don't know, it's a little bit of a maturity thing as well. It's just different. There's a big age difference as well on our team. People of all different ages and different life stages are all playing on this professional team, which is not like in college where we're all basically in the same bubble. So it's just been a maturity thing as well, recognizing, like, the different relationships that you'll have with teammates and those group times that we're all together, and then also the individual lives that we all live has been a huge thing, and language has definitely emphasized that for me, but I think that's something I would have noticed even if we were all speaking English all the time.
Right. But now, do you think that now, since you're learning the language, not only volleyball terms, but you're learning, you know, just language that impacts your life as well there. Do you think that as you become more fluent in the language that you'll start not minding your business as much? Or do you think that this is now something you're learning as a learned behavior where you might continue to do that?
I don't want it to sound like I'm, like, spying on people's conversations or I'm, like, nosy, but, like, I am just a social butterfly and I just, like, always want to chat with people. I guess I just want to set it straight. Yes, I definitely think not knowing what people are saying at times and stuff has been a motivator. to just ask more questions and different things.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest one for me, I'll share, like, we had our first scrimmage 2 weekends ago, and I would say that was a period where I felt a little bit isolated or nervous because it was a very different environment than being in practice where we have a drill and everyone knows what's expected and it's very pretty much planned on what's going to happen versus being in a game and now everyone's talking more freely and it's not like the same language over and over again. Like in practice, in a drill, it's very repetitive, whereas in a match, it's very spontaneous. And so that was a period that was a little bit overwhelming for me and I felt a little bit isolated because I'm used to just those hey, you got this, you need to do this, this and that. Like you can kind of do that. And some of my teammates are able to give that. And like, I'm again, like so thankful for them. Like I got so lucky with my teammates. They're always so quick to translate, but sometimes there's those inner conversations, right? So I'm a middle and then there's a setter and a libero, a defensive player. I might not be the one who needs to be corrected, but I am part of the play. And so it's like if the libero and the setter are talking to each other in German and I don't quite know what they say, if they say it too fast in the serve where I'm not able to get it translated, after a while it did kind of take a toll on me a little bit. Mm-hmm. And at that point, that was me just realizing, hey, like, what can I control? And in the match, just regulating myself and taking the time to try to translate and also to learn my own, like ask questions and also to learn on my own later in the day so that the next set, you know, the next match was better. And as we've done more test matches and scrimmages, it's definitely gotten better.
Now, has it gotten better because you have found better ways to understand the communication and to communicate yourself? Or has it become better because you're just trying to block it out and play on your own?
I think the first one, like just finding new, you know, one, I'm further along on Duolingo than I was 2 weeks ago. And two, being more confident and willing to ask questions and to be seen trying is like a huge thing that I'm trying to remind myself every day is like, hey, like I might not have the perfect grammar or pronunciation, but you get what I'm saying. And just getting confident with that and maybe sounding silly sometimes. And then also I just think as athletes know, like, there's a reason for preseason and there's a reason we have practice. I'm not the only new person on the team. We're all learning how to play with each other. And so I just think the more we practice and go through different situations in volleyball, we get to know each other better and we don't even need to have those conversations. We just know what our process is.
And that's something that's important because going through practices, learning, and anticipating what your teammates are going to do, that's a form of communication, right? Hand and arm signals, facial expressions, even pitch or tone of a voice, that those are also styles of communication where teammates could pick up what the other person is saying. And the reason I know this is I was thinking about this earlier before we met today. And, you know, I've coached, you know, not only in the U.S., but I've coached in 3 other countries and I've played in 2 other countries. And, you know, in each of those times where it first started, actually the first time that I started was coaching in Afghanistan. And I didn't understand their language, any of their languages at all. I mean, it was 5 different languages that were spoken, and then dozens of dialects that were spoken between there. And we had, you know, athletes from, you know, all the ranges. And so trying to find one communication style and one way to talk to each other and one way for me to receive information, that was always difficult. And so a lot of times it was hand and arm signals, or it was just understanding the other person, having empathy, just being patient. Those were important things. And then as a, you know, as a player in both Germany and Bundesliga and in Italy, as a player and as an athlete, it was a lot of the same, but it was a little bit easier because there was always someone to speak English there. You know, whether it was a coach or a fellow player, you know, it was a little bit easier because they could translate. But then sometimes I felt like I wasn't effectively communicating if I wasn't picking up the language quickly enough, or if I was relying on the translation as opposed to really communicating directly with that athlete that I wanted to, who may or may not have spoken English or spoken it well, or me who didn't speak German or Italian well at all, and having to try and make that communication one-on-one. So I wasn't being left out of those discussions where two other players were having that discussion, but it's something I should have been involved in too. And that's something why not only is it important for athletes to pick up a language if they're playing in another country or if they're playing in an area where they predominantly speak another language, but also to understand why that the other players are there and why they're there with each other and how they communicate. And, you know, because again, not everything is verbal.
Yeah. You've definitely described so much of what I've been experiencing and trying to figure out just the, and also I think for me, it's also been a thing of wanting to show respect and understanding. Like, I think my first day being there, the manager was like, okay, so we're going to speak German. Like, everyone's going to speak German and we'll try to translate for you. Like, is that okay? And I'm like, yes, of course. I'm in Germany. Like, you're all German. Right. You all speak German. Of course. You guys should speak German and we can translate and we can figure it out. And if it becomes like a big thing or whatever, I'll let you know. Like, I appreciate the, consideration and the kindness 100%. But for me, it's also been a thing about respect and also my own experience. Like, I, you know, why come to another country and decide to live here and spend all this time here if you're not gonna try to do things to also understand the culture? And obviously I have my own things and my own American ways and like phrases and things that I say, and I don't have to like give up those, but you know, why not lean into Fond and the recycling and biking everywhere and stuff? If you know, like, why try to keep living in the US if I'm going to move to Germany? Why not just play for the Mojo in San Diego, you know?
Well, those are all great points. Now, one of the things that you brought up was one of your initial discussions with the team about how They were very open with their expectations. Like, you know, for example, you know, we speak German here. That's how we're going to speak. We're not going to accommodate you where all of a sudden we're all speaking English, but we're going to definitely translate for you. Was that a good step in the right direction when you landed and you started practicing and meeting with the team, where you felt where you were being accepted not only as a player in general, but for who you are as a person and the learning curve you were going to come up against?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I would say, I think a lot of the times, what's also really cool about the German language from what I'm learning is that it shifts into English and other languages often as well. Like, people will be speaking German and then pick up an English phrase. It's like if another culture or language has like an impact or like left an impression on something in language or in culture, like I feel like from what I've heard, like the German language usually embraces that and keeps that word or that phrase. And so that's also been really nice for volleyball. A lot of countries speak volleyball, like play volleyball in English. And so there's a lot of phrases and different things in volleyball here in Germany that are in English still, regardless, even if there is a German word for it. So I would say that my team actually has been extremely accommodating. And most girls do speak English, which is also just so impressive to me, like how they're so quickly able to switch back and forth and say things to me.
like no, exactly.
I'm like, sometimes I want to practice my German and I'm like, oh, you guys already started speaking it in English, so I'll just keep with that. Like, thanks. I forgot what the question was, so that I wanted to say that.
Fine. And the one thing that you brought up is, you know, they're already speaking English so quickly and they're able to switch back and forth. But, you know, sometimes it's intimidating too, that like a lot of times it feels that they not only understand the English language better, but sometimes they speak it better than we do. And it's like, it's not even your native language that you started speaking. It's at least one other additional language, if not two or three, that you've that they have picked up in their youth and in their adulthood as well, that they're continuously using. And here we are as Americans, and we're, you know, a lot of us are just happy with English or whatever language we're not predominantly speaking in the communities that we live in. But, you know, English, we're like, oh, okay, this is easy, we got it. And then we go to another country and they not only speak it better, but they understand, you know, just sentence structure and language in general than we do.
Yeah.
So it is a little bit intimidating, and oh, by the way, they're awesome players on the court, and they really not put you to shame, but they make you pause and think about you know, how much confidence you have, and it's really a humbling experience.
Yes, I definitely have been humbled in my thing of like, okay, in order to get to a spot where I could even consider being able to speak German fluently, like, I have to be comfortable making a phrase and asking questions and potentially sounding stupid. I think that's a, you know, we've talked about that so much on here so far with the Culture and Sports podcast. It's also something I talk about in my podcast all the time. Like, don't be afraid to be seen trying. And that has definitely been a new thing that I've had to adopt that thinking to this experience with language and everything. And it's honestly, it's a pressure that I'm putting on myself. Like I said, most everyone speaks great English, like on my team. In the actual city that I'm in, not very many people speak English. So that is a place that I have to practice and stuff. But being willing to sound a little bit silly and, you know, mess up my subject verb agreement is just something that I've been forced to try to do. And again, that's why I'm so thankful for the volleyball aspect, and something I think people who are trying to go play professionally should definitely consider. I didn't realize that everyone would be German when I came to Grima and like signed my contract. But definitely something to consider is, like, you know, based off how strenuous this volleyball experience is going to be for you, you might want to consider how strenuous the cultural experience is for you. And I think I've been able to find a really good balance where I'm challenged in both, but not always challenged at both at the exact same time.
Right, right. No, that makes sense. Now, do you feel that you're making genuine connections with your teammates, where you're spending even a little bit of time with them off of the court? And I know it's a little bit difficult because you have multiple age ranges and different stages in life, but are you able to connect with your teammates on a personal level?
Yeah, my roommate and I have lots of conversations, go out and get ice cream and things like that. And then other girls on the team have been really awesome to invite me in to, like, hey, my family's going to do this fun thing, or some of us that live in a city like slightly closer going to do this event with our friends. Do you want to come? And we're only, you know, beginning to plan even more activities and things to do as the season comes. So I think I've got it as good as I can, as I possibly could have so far.
So the team has been open and or has been open arms for you. Your teammates have been, the coaches seem to have been, and the community seems to be, you know, open arms with you as well. Are there any challenges, not challenges, but things that are different between how you show up to a new team in the past, whether it was college or high school or club sports in the U.S., and then now for you professionally?
I think just recognizing that I'm somewhere new and that there's things that are going to be run a little bit differently. I think, again, like, the idea of minding my business is, like, good too. Like, you know, going from being captain at Cornell to being a grad transfer at Syracuse as well, where it's like, hey, recognizing that there's people who have been here for many years before you, who have been laying out processes and team understandings and different things and goals, and you should respect those. You can certainly add those and bring your flair, and that's why they've brought you here, but also respecting that has been a huge thing. I always just, for me, it's just always thinking about, like, hey, our schedule and how things are done is just so different. Like, in the NCAA, we would have our entire schedule for the entire year on our phones in July. It's not quite like that here. Things take a little bit more time. So just being patient with that and recognizing that other people have it handled and, like, trusting that as well. Obviously doing my part, shagging balls, putting up the nets, stuff like that, but just allowing other people to do things as well and to be the leaders and to, you know, educate me has been, I think, a huge learning thing as well.
So right now you're performing your role as a teammate, but don't you think some of the things that you've brought up, even though you're not a current leader on your team, don't you think a lot of those things that you're currently doing are still leadership traits and principles and those things that you believe as a leader, as a follower?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. I think everyone on the team, like, and this is so funny, like, I wish I could pull up, like, all the clips of me talking about leadership in sports, like over the years, because every year it's a little bit different. I genuinely think everyone on the team has a leadership role or has like an oar in the water where they're steering the boat in some way or another. And what I've found is often like the captains, like I even think back to my year, like what was the difference of me as a senior at Cornell being captain versus my junior year where I was just as vocal and all of that. The big difference from my role as captain versus just being the junior who spoke a lot and did my job was like sending out the text message about when we needed to be somewhere or meeting with coach about my opinion for the week, right? So, yes, while I'm not the one who knows every single thing, I think our coach also makes it clear that he wants everyone to have energy and everyone to give their input and everyone to ask questions and guide the team. So, I hope that I'm being a good leader and contributor to my teammates as well.
And one of the things that you're doing, to become a better teammate is you're trying to learn the language and the culture of the team as quickly as possible and as effectively as possible. So can you talk a little bit more about the things you're doing in order to make that happen on your end?
Yeah, I think for me, for me, one is trying to use the German phrases and words and stuff that I've learned as much as possible. So, like, I know now that Einmal is one more and Nochmal is another one. And so, like, I'm going to do my best to always say that instead of just saying, like, the English way or whatever. And just continuing to learn. I think, again, it's like, you know, I wish we could get one of my teammates in here and see what their perspective is. But to me, I feel like that's the best way of showing, like, hey, I'm in this, and sometimes I don't know what you're saying, and sometimes we could all get, you know, confused or frustrated, but, like, I'm trying. So that's, like, a huge one for me. And then also just asking them questions about their own lives and different things, like, hey, I noticed you did this weekend. And what I'm learning the most about all of this is, like, we're not all that different. There's definitely mm-hmm. some cultural things and, like, you know, they're driving manual and there's the Autobahn and, like, different things that are different and all of that. But in the end, like, we're all so similar, especially with TikTok and Netflix and all this stuff now. Like, we all grew up watching the same movies and TV shows. We're all watching the same TikTokers when we go home at night. So getting into that. And also it's funny because it's like I'll ask one of them a question about pronunciation and then I'll say it to someone else and they're like, oh no, you say it this way. And I'm like, you guys all have different dialects and accents anyway, like I'm not listening to any of you, like I just told, you know, I did their name, not their names, like I just told Bella this and Christina just said this, so what's the word, you know?
Yeah. And then plus, you know, in German it's not only a dialect or the language in general that may be different, it's also who you're speaking to, like mm-hmm. like the age or the level of respect, and so mm-hmm. that's a little more confusing too, especially when you're just starting out. But I do, but there is something I want to bring up. If we keep on talking about Duolingo and you work on that, do you think if we just keep on saying their company name that we might be able to get them to sponsor you? So should we just say that nonstop throughout the rest of this episode?
You know what? I think I should send Duolingo a message. That's such a great, you know what? Maybe we can get Duolingo to sponsor the little vault, the vlog series I was talking about.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm not even talking about culture and sports. I'm talking about your vlog series or Let's Talk About It. I mean,
They
there has to be
should,
a
you know
way
what?
somewhere.
Maybe
And
they
so
should.
if we just say their company name like 50 times, maybe they'll magically know that we're talking
No,
about
no,
them
no. We
and
can't.
listen to this podcast.
No, we can't give them any more free. We've already shown them. We've already shown them through this conversation how beneficial their product could be to our listeners. We can't give
Yeah.
them any more free game. Why would they pay for it?
Right. No,
So.
but the reason I bring it up in all seriousness is, going back to your US roots and your NIL, time in the US as a collegiate athlete. I mean, there are parallels to companies that wouldn't necessarily be within the sports sphere, but that are great examples of what partnerships could be. And I
Yeah.
think that's important for athletes to realize, regardless of what their age or level is that if you're using a certain product, in your, when you're preparing to compete or go to practice, and it's something simple and it's something that sports doesn't necessarily use or sports doesn't recognize as a product that athletes use. Those are always ideas of ways that you can reach out to those organizations to see if you can partner. And I know you've talked a lot about this on your own podcast and with other athletes in general, especially in the collegiate space. Can you explain a little more about the power of that?
Yeah, you know what? That's such like an interesting thing that you even say this because it was something that I had a episode maybe February, March, talking about the new professional volleyball leagues in the US. And one of the things me and my guest Abby, who played for the Orlando Valkyries the past 2 seasons, talked about was how many college players might decide to stay in the United States and forgo professional contracts in Europe. That's an interesting reason for 2 reasons. The first is that the professional volleyball leagues in the US are still very new and they can be shaky. And so it's not always the most, I can't, my words are complete. It's not always the safest choice. Like, if things
Right,
could happen, the
exactly.
league could fold, teams could decide not to actually have a season that year and take another year to build. And so it can be a little bit of a rocky choice. Whereas playing in Europe, where people have been playing professionally for I don't even know how many years, like, you have that experience. And then obviously you have the opportunity to travel and go do something totally new, which many of us, competitive, college athletes didn't have a lot of time to travel, do study abroad, anything like that throughout any of our life. But the other reason, while it's also interesting that some college athletes are choosing to play in the US over overseas is because they get to keep the fan base and the marketing and the NIL deals that they had while they were student athletes. And so, sure, many companies are international, but their base and the people that they are targeting when they use you are in the US and it's domestic. And so, let's think about like Lexi Rodriguez, who is super well known for playing in Nebraska. She ended up playing for the Love Omaha team, the Love Volleyball, the Pro League Omaha team. So she was able to keep that fan base from Nebraska. They're literally staying in the same exact, like, same city or area, pretty close, to go see her play. And then all of these, Nebraska-based companies that were the bulk of her NIL deals, get to keep her as someone who's constantly going to do the smoothies. Sure, she could technically post about, Lincoln smoothie in Italy, but it's not going to have the same track. It's going to be the same reused photo. And so for me, it's actually interesting going the other way because while there's still lots of endorsements for big international athletes, and for them, they're not international, just for professional athletes in other countries, there's endorsement deals. Think about people like David Beckham, Mbappe, all of that. There's huge deals for those people, but there isn't quite the niche and small influencer economy like we have for NIL. There are German influencers, there's French influencers, there's people on TikTok and social media, but there's not quite that like small athlete thing. It's still very much corporations sponsoring teams and putting their logo on the jersey and thing like that. So for me, that has been actually, Jeremy, something I've been interested in and looking into of just like, hey, how could I potentially work with other brands that are maybe more specific to the EU or specific to Germany that would want to work with me? It's really intriguing to me because it's a way to kind of be a pioneer in a way, which you guys all know I really love, like trying new things out and doing all of that. But also, like I always say, NIL can be free coffee. And so maybe La Roche-Posay wants to send me some free skincare and I don't have to pay 40 euros for my skincare routine anymore. That would also be great.
Right. No, and those are great things to think about, but you haven't been a typical NIL person in general. You've really taken a step back and looked at everything holistically. Can you explain a little bit more about that and why that's important to where you are today playing professional sports in Bundesliga or just in a professional league overseas, as opposed to chasing down every single deal possible like other athletes do in the U.S.? Like, why is there more than one way to achieve sponsorship for yourself or just NIL in general?
Yeah, well, I think my goal is different. I think many athletes who pursue like NIL rapidly in the U.S. are kind of doing one of two things. One, their goal is to be an influencer or maybe to be a professional athlete. And so they're setting the stage to have really great endorsement deals and good connections with brands that are going to be their career and pay their bills for, I would say, at least a 5 to 10 year period. And then the other half are athletes who, like I said, are trying to get free coffee or are trying to supplement what would have been a on-campus job or a work study. And I've been, interestingly, have been in between the two of those things. I use NIL to set up a long-term career for myself that I would love to have 5 to 10 years longer if that, which would be my podcast, consulting the business of sports. And at times I lean into the aspect of myself who also just wants to get free coffee and right. Pay for my textbooks. But I think I've been in a privileged position where I didn't need to make a lot of money off of NIL to live my life. I had other resources and different things in college that were able to help me get that. So I didn't have to grind on just like the brand deal aspect of it. It wasn't something that was huge to me. I was able to focus more on creating a brand and doing different experiences to build things. Like, I want to be a consultant and I want to work with different companies, and I do work with different companies and helping them with their marketing and all of that. It's a really cool thing that I add to them and offer to them to say, hey, not only have I negotiated these deals and I can get you guys the best athlete or the best way to get this marketing done, I've also been on the other side of that. And so that's a really great competitive advantage that I offer to the people that I work with, whether it is normal NIL deals or just larger marketing things. Like, hey, I actually understand how to get you the best deals and continue to get them. Coming over to Europe now, for me, it's just an opportunity to work even deeper into sports. It's a dream come true for myself to be able to say that I'm a professional athlete and to play at the highest level that I possibly can and to keep chasing that. But also to now be working in the sports industry, to have a podcast very much where we're talking about the culture in sports, just like kind of a nod to you, right? to be able to now say that I've played in Europe. Not that I've just studied it or read the books and know about these leagues, but that I've actually played it and have experienced it also just adds to my knowledge and gives me an opportunity to bring super dope people like my roommate and my coach to be guests on the podcast and have really cool conversations with them.
No, that's great. And I think you're bringing this episode to a great conclusion, but before we do leave, what are one or two senses or just thoughts about your current experience in general? And it doesn't have to necessarily be sports related, but it just could be, you know, experiencing different culture, living in a new environment, playing with athletes who you've never really encountered before. It could be a whole bunch of different things. But what are one or two thoughts that you have that you'd like to share with everyone?
I will start with a sports related one. I think just it's been really gratifying to see that the work that I've put in around becoming a better volleyball player has worked. That it's not a fluke. Syracuse didn't just happen to need me. Cornell didn't just happen to need me. There's people thousands of miles away who've seen me play and want me to be on their team and are willing to pay me for it. That is like the most gratifying experience. And then personally, I think it's just been very eye-opening and very cool to see my personality, resilience in a way, my openness and like wanting to learn, to see that in a new environment, and to struggle, but also to be able to get through it and to grow and to be learning. It's just like such a cool experience to know, like, hey, like who you are works in US, in Germany, wherever you go, like there's people and experiences and things for you here. And that's been so cool.
That's a wrap for this week's episode of the Culture and Sports Podcast.
We hope this episode has started an internal dialogue, or even one with your team, about the importance and impact of leadership and organizational culture.
This episode of the Culture and Sports Podcast was produced by Sydney Moore and Dr. Jeremy Piasecki, music by Chase Griffin.
If you'd like to learn more about culture and sports, the Culture and Sports Podcast, or our other programs, go to cultureandsports.com. where there's a wealth of resources, articles, research, podcasts, video shows, webinars, and courses.
Or you can connect with us on all social media platforms at Culture and Sports. Thank you for tuning in to the Culture and Sports Podcast.